Okay, welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast for today. We're doing a clinical focus on a subject that I think is of great importance because, you know, we often talk about, the right diet. We talk about the right supplements. We even talk about exercise, and we talk about stress reduction. A very, very important component of our overall health portfolio is resilience, which is defined as the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties or toughness. And it has a lot to do with whether or not we get sick, because our resistance is based on, to some extent, our resilience. But also, once we get sick, our capacity to overcome illness is governed to some extent by our quality of resilience. So there's some really interesting research on resilience that looks at our genes. Are you a warrior or are you a worrier? That sounds kind of catchy. Well, there's actually some evidence based on new genetic research that resilience, to a certain extent, may be hardwired in our genes. It's not as simple as, is it just one gene? You know, like, is it one gene that makes people fat? No, it's probably a combination of dozens of different genes. And if you have a predominance of genes that predispose to obesity, you might be more likely than the next person to get overweight. But it's not just like the fat gene, the one gene. And same thing when we deal with personality. Is there an anxiety gene? Is there a gene that predisposes people to homicide or to becoming a psychopath or becoming depressed or becoming schizophrenic? No, it's probably not one gene. It may be a combination of genes acting in concert with the environment. But there is a fascinating gene. It's called COMT or COMT. And it may be a major determinant of whether one succumbs to or surmounts stress. You can get tested for this. 23andMe will yield genetic information that you can process through various services, and then you can have your genetic makeup read. You can also, Ancestry.com will do this to some extent, but it's less comprehensive in terms of the gene survey. The genetic testing is usually done via saliva or a cheek swab, or it can be done via the blood. So what is COMT? COMT is a gene that's responsible for the degradation of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain that's responsible for motivation and reward. So with dopamine, some individuals have a double hit for each gene location. There's two places where you can have a mutation or a change. You can be heterozygous, which means you have one hit and one non-hit. But some individuals have a double hit on the chromosome that leaves them with insufficient dopamine. And as a result, these individuals tend to be more intrepid. They're the warriors. And conversely, the opposite double hit causes some people to be flooded with dopamine, and they are the worriers, because high levels of dopamine flood the brain and may create a propensity to higher levels of anxiety. But really, it's not that simple. Okay? Most people have a mixed pattern that's heterozygous, and that's me, by the way. And some studies suggest that ultimately these individuals are actually more successful in life because they have the best of both worlds. They're motivated to take risks because they don't have an overload of dopamine, and the dopamine prompts a risk-reward behavior. They go after stuff. But their zeal is also tempered with a certain amount of prudence. And overall, although clearly there are exceptions, they tend to have higher IQs. High dopamine individuals, the warriors, the worriers, they're the high dopamine individuals. They tend to be more creative, but they're also more prone to ADHD, attention deficit disorder, and they tend to get more pleasure out of life, but also more misery. And then there's the low dopamine folks, who might be more intrepid, but they're also potentially more lethargic, and they're more prone to depression and reckless or addictive behaviors. It's almost as if they need danger to stoke their production of dopamine, because they're low in dopamine. They are the so-called dopamine junkies, the people who, people who put on bat wings and jump off of cliffs. I can't believe those people. Or the people who freestyle climb cliff faces without ropes or nets. Those people are nuts, but maybe, just maybe, they're the low dopamine individuals, and they need to, they're medicating themselves with these dangerous, reckless experiences. And those people especially like to experience psychological problems if they have what's called an MTHFR mutation. That we talk about a lot. The MTHFR, sometimes not always associated with a higher homocysteine, but if you have, you can have a double hit on that or a single hit. A lot of people have a single hit. That's not a big deal, but a double hit makes it really more necessary that you get more B12, folate, and B6 to promote synthesis of feel-good neurotransmitters. So that's actually one of the reasons why when psychiatrists these days prescribe SSRIs, drugs like Lexapro and Prozac, Zoloft, that they often add a little bit of something called Deplin. Deplin is a folate product. It's a medical food. And it's being touted as a way to accentuate the benefits of antidepressant medications. And its use is particularly important if you have the MTHFR allele. So if you have the dopamine double hit and you have the MTHFR double hit, you might really have some trouble in terms of your resilience. And taking B6, B12, and folate might help to improve your resilience. But, you know, let's not get carried away here. Genes only have a very limited role in explaining personality. They're obviously going to be modified by diet, lifestyle, and, of course, life experience. And, you know, there's actually some evidence that there's just some very, very harmful ways of experiencing life in your early years that can almost permanently damage your brain. It's very hard to surmount the effects of early childhood deprivation, maltreatment, abuse. You know, kids who cry unconsolably and don't get any help from their parents, it can have a devastating and long-term imprinting effect on the brain. Also, early beatings, you know, kids who are beaten, abused, hurt, it can sort of light up the brain, part of the brain that's the fear center of the brain for a lifetime, and make it very hard to subsequently straighten out and reinterpret experience so that you can regain resilience. I guess it's possible. There's a lot of studies on kids who grow up with deprivation. But usually the kids who succeed have at least some element of at least one parent who provides them with solace. It's also, you know, there are a lot of books on how to raise resilient children. And many of the books and articles on raising resilient children suggest that you don't figure out everything for your kid, that you let your kid work things out, that you also provide your child with a role model for resilience, that you yourself are not constantly, you know, tearing your hair out and, you know, running around in circles because you're at your wit's end because of challenging life circumstances. That's a behavior that your child will is likely to model. You know, there are books and books have been written about how to cultivate resilient children. There's actually a movement in Europe, it's kind of an interesting movement, which is they take kids at a very young age and they send them to a camp. And we're talking kids in preschool. They take them away from the parents. The parents go off, have a happy holiday in, you know, the Mediterranean or somewhere. And the kids go to these camps, which are like Spartan, work camps or warrior camps, but the kids are learn how to take care of themselves, under some responsible adult supervision. So these are some of the things that might help to cultivate resilience early on. And, we talk a lot about the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. But really, I think one of the things we ought to be contemplating is how to create the 4R experience for kids, reading, writing, arithmetic, and resilience in our schooling. And I think, with helicopter parenting and to some degree coddling, and I think part of it is an environment where there's a lot of risk of litigation, that, we have to protect kids from injury and, we protect schools and teachers from lawsuits, that as a result, kids have a very sheltered and unstructured life that is, or perhaps too highly structured life, that doesn't enable them to experience and transcend adversity. All right, so coming back to a biochemical model, how do you boost dopamine for those who might be deficient? Well, L-tyrosine is a building block for dopamine, and you can find it in many foods, such as fava beans, duck, chicken, ricotta cheese, oatmeal, mustard greens, edamame, dark chocolate, seaweed, wheat germ. Or you can take L-tyrosine or acetyl-L-tyrosine, which is said to cross the blood-brain barrier, more effectively than just good old-fashioned L-tyrosine. This works best when you take them away from meals. You can try 1,000 milligrams 3 times daily. The only contraindication is if you're taking an MAO inhibitor drug. That is not a good combo to take. Also, you could take something called macuna. Macuna is a supplement that is believed derived from beans that is rich in L-DOPA, which is a dopamine precursor, and that could be helpful for those who are deficient. So the other thing to consider, this is really important, hormones determine your resilience. Possibly the most important hormone in terms of resilience is something called DHEA. DHEA is an adrenal hormone, which is about 2.5 times more plentiful in men than in women, but it's a unisex androgen. It's androgenic, but women have it to a high degree. It's actually the most plentiful hormone in the body. And DHEA, when I measure it in some patients who are tired or depressed or unresilient, is often very low. And taking DHEA can provide a psychological boost, combating depression and enhancing fortitude. So you might call it the closest thing to courage in a capsule. It's best to take DHEA under supervision to get your DHEA levels tested. If your DHEA level is low, you're a candidate for DHEA replacement. Many patients who are low in DHEA recover their mojo when they take it. So men can take 25 to 50 milligrams per day. Women do best with 5 to 25. Also, it's been conclusively demonstrated that testosterone supports motivation. So patients who are low in dopamine, well, a pretty classic example of low dopamine is Parkinson's disease. That's where the dopaminergic neurons in a certain part of the brain, the substantia nigra, cease to function well. And medication that is used to treat Parkinson's disease revs those neurons, or supports dopamine production, or substitutes for dopamine. But in those patients, testosterone really helps them, but testosterone also helps patients who are sort of demotivated. Because it literally does have an impact on dopamine. The typical testosterone-deficient male, or even females, because women, too, can be deficient in testosterone, suffers from inertia and sort of a lassitude, like, who cares? Also, adrenal adaptogens help patients cope with stress, because part of the response to stress is you produce cortisol. And if you're not producing adequate cortisol, you'll fold in the face of stress. The adrenal adaptogens include ashwagandha, eleutherococcus, which is also called Siberian ginseng, rhodiola, which is marketed as Rosuvin. That's the product that we sell. And Panax ginseng. These are popular adrenal adaptogens. There are others. Maca, to some extent, is an adrenal adaptogen from South America. Other supplements that help to focus and concentration and that may support resilience, although not always the case, include bacopa and ginkgo biloba and L-theanine. L-theanine provides people with calm focus, and there's actually research on all of those in terms of what they do to dopamine. It's still mental and physical conditioning that are the best ways to boost resilience. I personally, when confronted with a particularly thorny situation, I fall back on my memories of arduous triathlon training. You know, like, I've done the marathon. Well, you know, been there, done that. I got through it. It was an ordeal of sorts. Similarly, some of the triathlons that I've done, you know, really involved me pushing and stretching. And so I can translate that experience sometimes to daily life. You know, when it's, 6 o'clock and I've been seeing patients all day, and then they say, oh, somebody just arrived. They made a mistake. They thought their appointment was next Thursday. It's actually today. Can you see one more patient? I got to go, okay, this is a little bit like mile 24 of the marathon. You know, just get your second or third or fourth win, push on and prevail, and it'll be okay. You've been there already. I hope that I provided you with some basic introduction to the concept of resilience. Resilience is something that you want to emphasize, whether it's through mental conditioning or, you know, good psychology, through exercise, meditation, or through taking supplements which bolster your own, energy, fortitude, and resistance. This is, a good way to go. If you want to maintain your health. And I think, it's a much ignored aspect of health that I wanted to touch upon in today's podcast. So thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.